Hi, Tarek. Time for the Morning After podcast. Q1055.com. We're on Saturday mornings from 8 to 10 and some other times, but always online and on demand. And I like doing these off-air ones because we get to have deeper conversations with people that we don't always have time for on the show. We can use some salty language a little bit, and we're not as restricted in some ways. And we're about to have a discussion with a very familiar voice, someone that I know very well, someone that I call a friend. I might not nurture my friendships real well, but this person is a friend and one of the reasons why I truly hope that I can stay in and around the Toledo area. You know who this person is, and I'm going to ask this person questions that I have not yet had the answers to, so I figured it was a perfect time for a podcast.
Totally ready.
A very special and even a familiar guest on the exclusive off-air podcast of The Morning After. Someone who is on The Morning After. You might know him as... he's always been Demetrius Nicodemus. D is podcasting today, and I wanted D to come on because we've talked about this before, even not all of it. I don't even know the beginning of the story, but I wanted you to come on so we could talk about how the hell did State Farm happen?
How the hell did State Farm happen?
Because if you remember when we were doing the other show, whatever it was called,
yeah,
we had a sponsor named Mike
Buck. Mike Buck.
It's State Farm Insurance, the guy with the fire truck, yep. Big red fire, 15-second commercials, live reads. Did it all start with that?
It all started with that.
All right, so when was this?
Approximately 2 years ago when I started doing those spots for him.
Okay.
And... you know, he had found out, you know, what he was paying and, you know, what I was getting. And so he would do his best to, like, make it up to me on the back end of things like, you know, gifts and things like that and golf. And one day he said, hey, if I set up this meeting, you know, he goes, I think you'd make a great State Farm agent. And I was like, please. And he goes,
why did he think that?
You know, I don't, you know, because I don't know. We got along, you know, he was in the Air Force. I was in the Navy. And we, you know, we just kind of clicked. And so he like set up this meeting with what they call a State Farm recruiter.
When was this? How long after the endorsement started?
I want to say maybe like 4 months.
Okay.
After the endorsement started. And so he had set up this meeting with the State Farm agency recruiter, and you know I thought, well, what the hell, you know, what could it hurt to mm-hmm. just to meet with the guy? And so I met with him. He gave me an email address and a website to go to and take a couple of prerequisite tests before, you know, they would even consider me. I took those tests and passed. And
what kind of tests were they?
There were a lot of personality tests, leadership exams, psychological tests, you know, just to see how, if you would even have the, you know, the capacity to own and run your own business.
Right.
So it was like, it was one of those things. And I took a battery of exams and passed. And, as he started talking to me about it, you know, I could kind of see the writing on the wall as far as like what was going to happen to the show. And I knew that I didn't want to be a guy without a plan B.
Mm-hmm.
And because I wasn't leaving Toledo.
Right.
You know, that was never going to be an option for me because I love this city and I was born and raised here. So I wanted to make sure that I had an opportunity that was going to take care of my family as well as allow me to be active in the community. And this seemed to be a great opportunity that would allow me to do that.
So you took the test, you passed all them. When was this stuff going through your head? When did you think, this is a viable plan B?
Test
4 months, you did well on them.
Yeah. And then, you know, once that started, I had to put together a business plan, you know, how my business would be structured, how I would run my business, you know, how many employees, how many team members I felt I was going to need to start. And if that was a viable plan that I presented, then I would make it into the next round. And so I had to do a phone presentation of my business plan. There were certain parts of it that she was like, the lady who I did my presentation for was like, I need you to work on this.
What were those things?
It was a deeper analysis of the demographics, a deeper analysis of my marketing plan. And so she was like, I just want you to get a little bit deeper in that, talk to a couple more agents. And so I went and visited like four agents in the area and one in Cleveland. And so after talking to those guys, I like kind of rebooted my business plan and had another presentation, made it through that. And then it was like, now it's time for the education part, because I had to get my licenses before I could go farther through the process.
So at this point, can you think of the time frame, like months, year?
At that point, I was...
We're talking like late 2016?
Yeah, so towards the end of the year of late 2016, I started going and taking classes for my licenses and in insurance and like some fiduciary stuff.
So at this time, had you committed to leaving us, or were you just creating a very solid plan B?
Had the opportunity arose before what had happened to the show I would have left.
Like what opportunity?
Well, I wasn't going to leave Toledo, so they have what they call opportunities that they present to, you know, like would-be agents.
Like you have a business opened up?
Yeah, okay.
Like, gotcha, like an agent retired or whatever?
Yeah, an agent retires, or God forbid an agent passes away, then that's an opportunity that opens up. And so it just took a while, you know, before something like that happened. Had it happened earlier, I would have left. I mean, because the opportunity was such a good opportunity, and I wouldn't have been able to look, you know, my wife in the eye and say, you know, I didn't let this go because I'm doing this thing. It would have been irresponsible to do. So
what about it appealed to you most? The fact that you unwittingly did really well in mastering, you know, the tests and the licenses and the business plan? Like, did you surprise yourself?
I did, because I'd never written a business plan in my life. You know, that was probably one of the most daunting and probably fearful things I'd ever had to do. Because you see those books, you know, like Business Plan for Dummies,
right,
and blah, blah, blah. And I didn't know much about, you know, marketing demographics and customer segmentation and those kind of things. And so delving into that stuff and being all new to it and not really knowing, like, what some of the stuff was, like, when I started, I'm like, I don't know. I'm just putting numbers in here. I have no concept of what any of these numbers mean. And then having been told to delve deeper into it and get a better understanding of it, it was daunting, and it was a little intimidating.
Mm-hmm.
And so going through all of that and then going through the licensing portion of it, because you have to go through the state. You know, you have to take a series of classes and then pass a pretty rigorous state examination. And then on top of that, the state runs a background check on you, and then get through all of that and then get your licenses and then present those licenses to State Farm and say, okay, I have these. And they're like, great. Now that you have those, we can start the next part of this process.
What did it cost to get all those state licenses and tests and exams? So, because you're investing here.
Yeah, yeah, you're investing. You know, it cost the classes, I want to say, cost somewhere around like $650.
So like three car remotes.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And then, you know, you have to pay for the test, which is another $25 or I want to say 25. It could be more expensive, but then you have to pay for the exam, that you take through the state that's proctored by somebody, which first of all runs a metal detector over you, checks your glasses for cameras, any kind of recording device. I mean, the security involved in just taking the test is off the hook. I'm like, first of all, when I finish this, are you guys giving me a brick of gold? Because that's the only way that this kind of like security examination seems worth it.
We got this Kingsman guy walking in here with these spy glasses.
Yeah, it was just like, they're like, we just got to make sure there's no recording devices. Nobody can talk to you. Yada, yada, yada. You're not, you know. I'm like, people have, and that's my thing. I'm like, once you start looking for that, I always feel like somebody has done it and then been caught. And now you're like, now I got to look for this all the time. So I'm like, who did that to pass this test? But, and so you go through all that stuff and then, you know, you wait for your opportunity. And then once you have your opportunity, you go to your site interview, which was in Cleveland, which was with me and one of the vice presidents of State Farm and the guy who recruited me.
Wasn't this after we got let go? June 7th.
Yeah.
Because I remember when I came over that morning, you're like, oh, it's okay. I got to go do some things. I think they were shortly thereafter that.
So yeah.
The timing was
perfect. The timing was perfect.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it seemed serendipitous the way everything worked out, you know, but...
What was the biggest draw to this other than you surprised yourself that you were pretty good at going through this intimidating process and you mastered it?
The biggest draw, the honest to God, was...
money and being able to stay?
The financial security, being able to, you know, provide job opportunities to people, you know, through a business that I was starting, the fact that I was going to be allowed to be as active in the community as I was when we were doing our show. And another thing was I make the decisions.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's nice.
I mean, when they were like, look, this is your business. Like State Farm provides a ton of training and a ton of assistance to make sure that as an agent, I don't fail. All I have to do is rely on those resources.
Mm-hmm.
However, if I were to tell them at the end of my first year that I never wanted them to walk through my doors again, they would go, well, we have to do it. You know, it's his business.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and being the one who gets to determine the direction in which my agency goes was super attractive to me.
So what directions do you have? Like, what kind of autonomy is there? Because obviously there's a framework of the State Farm business model that you have to execute. But
No.
So you there's can just no... sell different plans and say, you know, State Farm is the umbrella, but I can create these to suit you.
Yes, insurance is like that. What you do is you make sure, and even some of the financial services that I provide can be tailored to a person's specific need, and it's your job. And here's the thing. When somebody walks into my agency, it is not somebody that I look at and go, okay, they're going to get this, 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 and this.
Mm-hmm.
What happens is I'm going to sit down, or somebody from my team is going to sit down with you, and we're going to find out what you need. And if what you need is less than what somebody, like, there people want to force certain things down your throat. If that's what you need, that's what you get. Nothing more, nothing less. I'm not, you know, we're focused on the well-being of the people who walk through that door. That is our main focus. I don't care about money or anything like that. I figure as long as you take care of the people that walk in the door with their legitimate needs, everything else will take care of itself.
Mm-hmm.
So take care of them. Make sure that when they walk out of there, they either have a better understanding of what they have, they know what they have, or they know that now they have something better than what they had before. That's how that works.
So we're after we got let go, you did lots of training.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the stuff we've talked about, I guess, here and there on the air or in public, I guess. What was the toughest part moving forward?
Driving to Bloomington.
In Illinois. Not Indiana. Illinois.
Not Indiana.
What?
Bloomington, Illinois was probably, and that's the corporate headquarters of State Farm. It's a week at a time, once a month. I'm gone from home for an entire week. It's a 6.5 hour drive to Bloomington, which is not a fun drive.
Right. Or probably a fun place.
Yeah.
Applebee's. It's just,
there's a ton of restaurants. They do have a college there, you know.
What school is there?
State Farm U.
Yeah.
But.
Because when you told me Bloomington, I'm like, oh, that's so cool. That's like where Indiana is. What a cool town. No.
No.
I didn't even know there was a Bloomington.
It's Bloomington and Bloomington Normal. There's Bloomington and then Normal, which are like suburbs of one another.
Okay.
You can be in Bloomington drive to Normal.
Normal is the name of a place?
Yes.
Normal, Illinois?
Yes, Normal, Illinois.
That sounds horrific.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And so, you know, there's not a lot of stuff to do there, especially when you're training and you're up at like 7 o'clock because you got to be in the classroom at 8. And then you're in the classroom from like 8 to like 5. And that's all just, you know, learning your craft.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you get done with that, the next thing you want to do is have a cocktail.
Right.
So you have a lot of cocktails until 8 o'clock rolls around and you start the whole process over again. You know, that was probably the worst. The last day we drove back was the first time we'd had a really bad snowstorm this year.
Mm-hmm.
And that was like, I'm like, this couldn't end any better than a treacherous ride home, you know, on the last day of training in Bloomington.
But after that, it's over.
Yeah. But then after that, you got 2 weeks before you open up. So it was just like.
What time frame are we at now? Are we in like December?
December.
Okay.
December of 2017. And so you go through your last trip to Bloomington, and now your doors are set to open January 2nd. So now you're 2 weeks in, you have 2 weeks left of December, which happens to have Christmas and New Year's in it.
Mm-hmm.
So the likelihood, if you haven't been planning from like since October and you start trying to get your office ready in December, the likelihood of any of that getting done is zero to none.
And your doors, if they didn't open on time, then we start losing money?
There is no, we don't open on time.
Okay, right.
Like that was like the hard line for when like we launched, as far as State Farm was concerned, everybody's doors open on the second. You know, granted your systems may not be working, you know, when your doors open, but your doors open on the second.
Tell me about the period in time throughout this process where you're like, I don't know if this is such a good idea.
I flip-flop from those thoughts every day. There is not a day or like an hour that goes by where either A, I'm like, wow, I got a handle on this, we're in the groove, and then the next thing, something can happen where you've never had to do something like this before, and you're like, oh my God, what was I thinking? You know, what was I thinking when I hired these two people full-time and told them that, you know, all you had to do was just, you know, I've laid out this structure, follow this structure, and everybody's going to, you know, you're going to make a living. It's my job to provide you with that living. And now, you know, I have, and that was like the hardest thing. It was like, you know, now you have the responsibility of your family, you know, your wife, your kids, your home, your bills. Now on top of that, now you have two other people, two mm-hmm. grown people who also have families, whose families depend on the salary that you're providing. And if you can't succeed at your job, how can you maintain to still pay those salaries?
Mm-hmm.
So now you have two other families that depend on what you do, two other families that you don't even necessarily are in contact with a ton, but you know that they depend on the person who's working for you, their income to continue to come in.
And obviously what they do is a part of that, but I understand completely what you're saying. You feel responsible for their livelihood.
Yeah.
You as a boss, a manager, a leader, you've got to provide them the best tools you can so that they can succeed.
Mm-hmm.
What are you most scared about moving forward? Maybe having to fire somebody?
No, no.
You looking forward to that?
I'm never looking forward to that. The thing that, you know, that I'm consistently and constantly worried about is, you know, maintaining a healthy, steady growth of my business. You know, I feel like they, when we go through this, State Farm asks you for your mission statement.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what is your mission statement?
What's yours?
And a lot of people like used State Farm's original mission statement. I didn't want to do that. My mission statement, as far as like, and I hate saying it, like my mission statement, but what I've told like the people on my team, as far as like how I want this business to work, is that when people walk in the door, I want you to look at them like a family member that you love, and I want you to take care of them as if they are that family member, and that family member that you love, like your grandmother or your mother or your father. They come in here and they have a legitimate need to understand their coverages, or they have a legitimate need for another type of coverage or something like that. You don't ever want to screw over your grandma or your mom or your dad.
So what's the mission statement?
The mission statement is we treat everybody here like family. And that's what your concerns are our concerns. And when you walk out those doors, we will have done the best that we can do to alleviate any concerns that you have.
I like your concerns are our concerns. I like that a lot. That's,
you know,
different.
So that's how I go into this. You know, I hope that's a good, you know, way to conduct business. I know there's a lot of cats out there who don't care how they get it, as long as they get it.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't care what the effects it has on the people that walk through those doors. But I'm not that guy, and that's not how my business is run.
So you're afraid of like whether or not you can and this will grow. So let me ask like a real like granular mm-hmm. question. How's the insurance business these days? Like the industry itself? Like I know like ever since he became president and people are giving him all the credit for the stock market, like reaching astronomical highs, which is just coincidence.
Mm-hmm.
And
absolutely.
Economic times are yeah. pretty good. So is the arrow for insurance? I mean, it's something that people always need. It's like, you want to get into? I always tell people, remember, open a hospital or a college, you'll always make lots of money. Mm-hmm. You might feel awful about yourself, but is insurance a good business to be in?
Insurance is a good business. As long as you go into it, I will always be the one who stands behind the idea that if, you know, as long as you're not chasing a dollar over a person, you're always going to do better than the person who's chasing that dollar, rather than trying to take care of the person
sure.
who's standing in front of them. Insurance is a great business. It's probably like the best kept secret in, like, as far as I'm concerned,
More than Bitcoin
in the industry.
More
yeah.
than Bitcoin.
Because if you do it right, not only do you get to take care of a bunch of people in your community, but you can also make a pretty good living at it. I mean, a really good living if you do it correctly. And that kind of security, you know, that you can have for your family, the knowledge that, hey, you know what, maybe a vacation isn't going to be the hardest thing in the world that we have to do to save for now, or that, you know, you want to go and you want to take a little weekend somewhere, that you can take that weekend, but also knowing that at the drop of a hat, people need me at the worst times of their lives. You know, that's when I'm going to get a call. I'm going to get a call when somebody's house is on fire. I'm going to get a call when
somebody... We have a lot of those here.
Yeah, when somebody's, you know, somebody wrecks their car, or God forbid, they, like, their spouse or, you know, parent drops dead. Those are the moments that I have to be at my best, because you are at your worst. So there's a lot of responsibility with that, and it's sobering at times, but... The best part is like is knowing that like you're equipped with the tools to help them.
So,
and that sounds corny as hell.
No, not at all. You get, as you were saying that, I'm thinking you get to be a superhero. You get to swoop in when somebody's life is in chaos or carnage and go, it's going to be okay. Wait, did they pay their premium? It's going to be okay. What? So and like to the point of like, is it a good business? Yeah, because you know, everybody needs insurance. Mm-hmm. I think every state mandates like car insurance, yeah, and the other things are very important to have. There's never a time where it's like, you know what? I think we're going to cut back on some things, and insurance is never one of those things.
But you know what? Here's the funny thing. 9 times out of 10, when things are getting tight, the first thing that people cut back on is their insurance.
Because you don't when use, it, cause you, you yeah, you
because
don't
you don't
it.
See it. Right. You don't see the effects or the necessity of it at the time. You're like, well, I spent like 3 months. I haven't gotten into an accident. Well, when things are getting tight is when your insurance is the most important. You know, when those things, because when those things lapse, when you decide not to like pay your insurance premium or make sure that your home insurance is taken care of and your car insurance, and then when you're in a super tight spot and you get into an accident, imagine the effects of that accident now when you don't have insurance, because now you're on the hook for the damage of the car that you hit. Now you're on the hook for the medical payments of the people that were in that car that you hit, and you don't have anything. There's not one company standing behind you saying, we're going to take care of a portion of this, or we're going to take care of all of it. Now you're responsible for all of it. So the financial stress that you're feeling today is doubled, if not quadrupled, by an accident that you get into because you decided, you know, you were going to take a chance bucks. And you were going to save a couple of bucks.
My dad, Barry's had like one like adult rule in my life. Got to have health insurance. So when ours went away, I was paying like Cobra, and it was $330 a month.
Mm-hmm.
Thankfully, you know, I get some subsidies now; it's a lot cheaper. But that's been like my dad's one rule all along: you gotta have health insurance, because it's funny how these things happen. You only get hit by the bus when you don't have insurance.
Yeah,
and it's like, hope it backs up and finishes me off.
Mm-hmm. I really hope it was his fault.
Even then,
like. It's crazy.
Last thing.
Yes, sir.
And I'm glad we got to talk about it. We've never had this conversation before. What do you miss most about what we did, or, you know, we do this briefly now. What do you miss most about, like, the way it used to be?
At times, the camaraderie. That's probably the one thing. The, like, being able to sit and have legitimate conversations about things with people who have, you know, sometimes misinformed and opposing views, but
you can have that now.
Not now, not so much now. You know, it's very funny how little people want to disagree with you when you write checks to them.
No, there's that.
Like, there's that.
But you can't form that camaraderie.
Yeah,
it sounds like you've already worked on that.
But it was this, you know, it was being able to actually sit down and like have like legitimate conversations with people, and have some fun along the way. I mean, I didn't think we were doing a bad job.
No, we didn't do anything wrong.
Yeah. So when that ended, it was weird because I felt like for something like that to end, we should have done something wrong. Mm-hmm. You know, that's how I felt. I mean, like when you're doing what you're doing and you're doing it well, job security should not be a thing. It shouldn't be a thing for you. You should wake up every day knowing that you're going to be okay. And that was not the case where we were at.
No, for a lot of companies, not just radio or media or anything, anytime there's any kind of financial strife, it puts those pressures in place. And I'm glad it went down the way that it did. I didn't want to have to go for me losing my cool one day too much or something like that. Or sending an email to the wrong... Because you know what? You don't get severance with that.
I know.
I'd never walk out. You could.
Dude, I was totally double dipping too. Like my internship started at State Farm, and like as soon as my internship started, I started getting severance checks, and on top of that, I was getting paid by State Farm for my internship. I was like, man.
I was just thinking about it. It's tax season now, so get me my DJ Khaled commercials for whatever. I thought, well, I only worked 6 months, but I'm like, oh, wait, another 3 was a regular paycheck, so I'll get a nice little refund this year.
Yeah.
Anything else as we wrap up?
You know, I don't think so. I mean,
I had this discussion with other people when talking about this situation, and like in a way, we're opposite in a lot of ways, but in this way, we're like yin and yang. like, I told people not to worry about you because, like I said, D's got the mindset where he's got Kara, Connor, Cohen. How, like, you might have to, but you have the right mindset to do something that you might not necessarily, like, love doing because you're family first.
Mm-hmm.
And Kara's got to have a roof and a vanity in front of her. Mm-hmm. And maybe an Apple Watch.
Yeah, and,
so
yeah.
If you got to get on the back of a dump of a garbage truck, you would do it.
But that's how I was raised.
Right.
I mean, my mom always taught us, like, you know, and it took a long time for that to sink in. But what you have when you have to do stuff, you have to. Mm-hmm. I love the industry that I'm in. I love the fact that, you know, I own my own State Farm agency. I love that. I enjoy the back and forth that I have with my clients. I enjoy, you know, and I shouldn't say enjoy, but it brings me some kind of, like, pride.
It's fulfilling to help
them. When somebody calls me and they're like, look, I really need this and blah, blah, blah. This is going this way. And I can go, give me 15 minutes. Let me make some phone calls. Let me see what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
And then in, like, 10, I can call you back and go, look, this is what's going on. This is what's being taken care of. If you have any more issues, please don't hesitate to call me.
When I was in some of my moods and I'd go to my therapist, I kind of, like, made a promise to him and to myself. I'm like, you know, whatever I wind up next, or if, like, this stress drives me, like, out of this, I made a promise to myself that whatever I did next will be more nourishment for my soul.
Mm-hmm.
And even if it's, like, a different kind of media job, like, I didn't want any more of my soul eroded away.
Yeah.
And I've got to balance things a little bit better. And for sure, I will not let wherever I go next, I will not give it more love if it doesn't give me it back.
Yeah. You can't. I mean, you have to do stuff that feeds your spirit. And as weird as that sounds, you know, everybody has something different that feeds their spirit. You got to find that. And granted, I hate it when people go, if you find it, then you can make it make money for you. Well, that's not necessarily true all the time. You know, I can enjoy picking dandelions because it feeds my spirit, but nobody's going to feed my pocket because I love picking dandelions. But you have to be able to find something and an aspect of it that does feed you, and then focus on that. And then do your job.
I've kind of backed off something that I learned, like, in my early 20s, that the line, love what you do and never work a day in your life.
Yeah.
So something like that. And then that thing that I love didn't love me back. And then, so I backed off of that, but I will not back off of happiness as a currency.
Mm-hmm.
You could be making, like, $100,000 and working yourself to the bone, and your bank account keeps going up and up and up, but you can't enjoy using any of that money on things. So maybe you make 60, which is still very livable, but you are happier, you've got a better balance in your life, that 60 will go a lot farther than that 100. So I will not stop believing that happiness is a currency.
I believe that.
And, like, I enjoy the money that I made. It was nice to not have responsibilities like you had with houses and stuff, kids. I had dogs and Transformers to buy, and that was it. So I was smart with my money. But it wasn't, you know, if you can't enjoy it, it's not worth making.
Mm-hmm. You're absolutely right. I mean, because then you just end up looking at that, whatever you're making, with a little bit of disdain.
Right.
Because you're like, this was supposed to make me happy.
And
you're not.
You're so stressed out. It's like, I could buy whatever or go wherever, and it's just not making me feel good, because ultimately I have to go back to something that I might not enjoy and doesn't treat me well.
Yep. Yep.
I can't wait to see pictures of the vanity. The vanity?
Yeah.
She won't hear
that. Oh, yeah, she won't hear that. You're right. Well, yeah. It'll be a surprise to both of us.
Exactly. All right, thanks.
No problem, okay, Bubba. Bye.